Hello and welcome to The Stack. For this week's show, we speak with the editor-in-chief of Wild Sand, a new title dedicated to road trips. Plus, where to buy independent titles in Nairobi and Japan House's London exhibition on Japanese music books. Enjoy the show. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. We start the show talking about the beautiful new magazine Wild Sand. We all know the travel publisher from a previous episode here on The Stack. They publish fantastic guides to US cities, but this time expanded to a first-of-its-kind national magazine dedicated to road trips, recreational vehicles, and the outdoors. As they like to say, they believe the American road trip is a rite of passage and a shared source of wonder. I had the pleasure to speak with Wild Sand's editor-in-chief, Taylor Bruce.
Before Wild Sand, I was in the magazine world. I was a staff editor at a Southern Culture magazine here in the States for 3 years, and I was a freelance writer for a bunch of publications. So, I mean, that was very much informative of Wild Sand, the field guides. You know, if you look at our books, they do have the TOC has a magazine quality, even though the books, you know, they're not shaped like a magazine physically, but there's sort of a front of book and a feature. And, you know, the way we do interviews harkens back to sort of an Esquire model of, and so magazines are certainly in the DNA of Wild Sand. But no, we did not think about Wild Sand as a magazine from the get-go. And in some ways, it was the brand sort of had about a 10-year run to bake before the idea even occurred to us to do a magazine.
The magazine itself, it feels to me, is a love letter to the road trip, right? Which in that sense, it kind of connects to the guides in a way.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, we have a series of books that are road trip guides and road trips, you know, they factor into, you know, our national park series and our pursuit series as well. So we're certainly familiar with that mode of travel. It also feels there is a almost like an American culture thread of the road. And so it makes sense as an American travel brand that we would launch a magazine that has that sort of that angle, you know, that niche. It felt right when we were concepting what can Wild Sand magazine be. We wanted it to have a bit of a unique point of view and the open road, as we sort of call it, you know, is that point of view, which is kind of a mix of curious travel that blends outdoor pursuits and, you know, road trip culture. Stateside, at least, there's been a return to that sort of nostalgic form of travel in the last 4 or 5 years. There's certainly been a fascination with vehicles that sort of cater to that type of travel, you know, whether it's the vintage Airstream, you know, or more of a kind of a classic RV, you know, that type of experience has sort of like resurfaced for a new generation. That's what this magazine is all about.
And I think it's quite an ambitious launch as well, because it's, from what I can see here, is not a biannual. It's not just kind of a thing that you're going to see just time to time in the newsstand. You are already at issue 3, and the first issue was published January 2024. So perhaps not quite a monthly, but it's ambitious. It's nice. So you do believe in the print product.
Yeah, I mean, we will do 8 print issues a year. And in between, we'll do seasonal digital issues. We wanted the consistency. I mean, part of the beauty of a magazine is that, you know, they sort of show up on your doorstep within a few weeks of each other. So it's almost like a fairly consistent conversation, dialogue with the reader. And, you know, I certainly understand the business challenges that the magazine industry faces, but when you only do 2 or 4 issues a year, the reader can sort of forget about what had been building, you know, in terms of the stories that you're sharing. So yeah, it's, you know, it's a 100-page magazine, it's 8 times a year. And, you know, our team, we had sort of gotten into a rhythm of doing about 12 to 14 books a year. And so we're used to having multiple things going at once. And so the rhythm of doing that many was not that was not a difficult thing for us to sort of engineer. We just shipped issue 4 to the printer.
Very specific comment here. I love the paper stock of the cover. I don't know, it just feels very delicious to the hand. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, print is a physical experience. You're holding it. You know, it's one of the compelling aspects of doing a print publication versus all digital. You know, it's a different experience when you're holding it. 15 plus years ago, I was in a meeting with some young magazine staffers, and it was the CEO of Time was talking to a group of us. You know, we were all in our mid-20s, and she had just seen the first iPad. It was before the iPad had launched. And we were talking about, and this was obviously the future was to come. No one knew exactly what was coming, but she said something I never forgot, which is there's a difference between reading something digitally on a screen in print in your hands. And the way she described it was when you're reading something, whether it's on a laptop or an iPad or your phone, your posture is slightly different. You're a little bit hunched forward and there's a bit of a research mentality. You're kind of working. When you're reading something in print, you typically are a little bit sort of like more loose. You're leaned back somewhat. There's a little bit of a recline. It's a bit more leisurely. That always stuck with me of like, there is a feeling, it feels different to have something in print than it does digital. And obviously we know that like the attention span on digital is seconds and print hopefully slows you down a little bit. Good things happen when we slow down, I think. So we're thrilled. And I mean, we've been print forward for the lifespan of Wild Sam. So it makes sense that we would print this thing.
Absolutely. So tell us about where the team's based. I know you are in Austin, Texas, which is a booming market. I mean, here in Monaco, in different fields, not just publishing. So it's quite interesting. You're not just New York or LA. But tell us more. So, of course, we have a base there in Austin, Texas. But what about your other team? Because it's a magazine that is about travel. So I'm sure you're going to explore every single corner of the United States.
Yeah, that's right. So we have, we've got about 18 people on the team. And, you know, our base, you know, our home office is here in Austin, which is really a great hub for what we do. It's the center of the country. It's, as you said, it's a city that's very future forward, lots of energy and new things happening every day, great weather. But our editorial team, I mean, they're peppered around the country in St. Pete, Florida, upstate New York, Portland, Oregon. One of our lead designers lives in a Sprinter van and he's, I don't know where he is right now. Last week he was in the Ozarks somewhere in Arkansas. Last summer he was in Alaska all summer. So we're peppered around the country, which is great for what we do because our antenna are always out for what's going on out on the road and in all things travel culture. Yeah, like most companies and certainly media brands, we've shifted sort of how we work in the last 5 years, and it's great. It serves our purposes in some ways better than before.
And Taylor, issue 4 should be out very soon. But of course, you guys still do the guides. Give us an update perhaps about your latest releases and how perhaps the guides are still essential to the brand in a way.
We're coming up on our 60th book. You know, they're all travel destinations or trips in the US, which is different and sets us apart a bit. We take a strong focus on national parks, on road trips, as well as sort of like the iconic destinations that have a blend of, you know, you can road trip Cape Cod or coastal Maine or the Pacific Northwest, but you could also sort of like kind of hunker down and spend a week in a certain place. So a couple of news bits. We launched a series a couple of years ago we call Pursuits that's been fantastic. We've done around 15 of those books. And what those are is we take a destination or even a state and we kind of go deep on that place, whether it's Western Montana was a really successful one from, you know, last year. Northern Michigan was our top selling book last year. And the thing that's different about those books, we obviously do the Wild Sam thing. We tell the stories of the place and give you that sort of highly curated list of what to do and where to go. But we also pick a single topic that's sort of baked into the cultural heritage of that place. And we do an entire sort of segment chapter of the book on that. So in Western Montana, it was fly fishing. In Southern California, it was surfing. In coastal Maine, it was boat building. And we just go deep into that. We call them the pursuit series. So that pursuit is something that gets highlighted and featured, which is pretty fun and a fresh way to approach a place. This coming year, we've got a bunch of titles we're excited about. We will return to the National Park series with an Olympic National Park book in Washington State. We've got a Route 66 book, which we think is going to be really interesting. That is sort of the mother road in American travel history. And so we've got a book about, you know, it's from Oklahoma to Santa Monica, California. We've got a book that'll focus on California redwoods. So that's a bit of an outdoors road trip, you know, combination. Another one that I'm really excited about, the state of North Carolina and Asheville, North Carolina, particularly is a really growing destination and travel market. It's close to the Great Smoky Mountains, a lot of incredible sort of gateway towns into that national park. So we're going to focus in Western Carolina for a project. So yeah, the books keep coming, and it's certainly at the core and the heart of the brand. One of the most interesting things about launching a magazine 10 years after starting the field guides is that we started, you know, we have over 250 contributors across the country. We've reviewed over 1,000 restaurants. There's so much IQ and knowledge and intel, and I mean, most importantly, relationship that was waiting to be activated in a new way with this magazine, which has been so fun. We've been working mostly with contributors from the books to make the magazines.
Thank you very much, Taylor. And Wild Sands issue 3 is out now. For more information, go to wildsand.com. And now we're heading to Nairobi to speak with Michael Kenga, owner of Paper Cafe, a magazine and bookstore selling a select range of independent titles in Nairobi. It's a clever mix of international and local titles. I had a great conversation with Michael. Let's have a listen.
I've always been a lover of publications. Professionally, I'm a graphic designer. So I've always loved print. And one of the things I loved most when I was in university was our print production class. And from that stemmed my love for publications, and I started collecting. I went to school in SA, and in SA, there was quite a vibrant magazine scene. Then when I came back, I felt like it was lacking. I couldn't find the publications that I wanted. And it took me a long time to decide to actually open Paper Cafe, probably more than 10 years of thinking about it and considering it. And then finally, one day, I honestly just decided, let me bring in some publications and see if anyone would be interested. If not, well, I guess I'll have some publications that I can keep for myself. Yeah, and that's basically how it started, from my love of publications as a graphic designer.
And perhaps you found a gap in the market as well where you live, right?
Yes, I definitely felt that I was not the only one who wanted good publications in Nairobi. I couldn't be. There was like no statistics to play off. Or I did not know of any statistics that I could use, but I had a strong feeling as a creative and interacting with other creatives in Nairobi that there was definitely need for inspiration outside of, I guess, online, on screen, social media, just something physical to hold in your hand.
And, you know, for our Kenyan listeners or international listeners who are in Nairobi, if people are interested, I know Paper Cafe at the moment is at a bakery, right? Tell us where it is and perhaps the future plans for Paper Cafe too.
So the first pop-up location is located in a bakery in Westlands neighborhood in Nairobi on Raptor Road. The bakery is called The Good Rain, and I thought it would be a good place to open the first pop-up because the businesses are complimentary. You can grab a coffee and a pastry and sit down and have something to read. So that's where they can find it.
But you're planning, I guess, for more pop-ups as well. But do you ever plan perhaps for a, you know, not a pop-up, but a proper space just for you, just for a Paper Cafe?
Yes, so we do plan on having like more pop-ups around the city so that you don't all have to go to one side of the city. It's available across the city. In terms of Paper Cafe having its own physical space. It's quite the dream, and I hope that does happen at the moment, but no such plans in the near future, but it's definitely in the back of my mind.
Let's talk about the magazine selection. I had a look, you know, on your social media. You have Monocle, so thank you very much. Hope it's selling well in Nairobi. So what type of magazines do you have? You have very, very famous and very renowned international titles, but are you planning to have perhaps, I don't know, local titles from Kenya or even from other African countries as well?
So basically, when I do my selection, I try and ensure it's a mix of everything, because not everyone is familiar with the independent magazine scene. So I'm trying to also introduce maybe those people who might not be familiar using the titles that are more well-known, and then throwing in a mix of titles that maybe are not that well-known, just for some variety. And in terms of local titles or titles from the continent, it's something I've been actively trying to ensure happens. And we do have some local titles. We have titles from Rwanda, we have titles from Kenya, we have titles from Nigeria as well. There's Oath from South Africa. So I try and have a healthy mix, because I also believe that inspiration can come from anywhere. It doesn't have to come from the continent. It doesn't have to come from Western countries only, but it's good if it's a mix of both. And by stocking local titles, hopefully we can encourage a space where people feel, well, I guess there is a space for them to have their magazine sold and seen, etc.
I wonder if you could give me some recommendation of, I don't know, magazines and newspapers next time I'm in Kenya that I should be watching out for.
I would definitely recommend Master Weavers, which is from Rwanda. It's a beautiful large format book about master weavers, master women weavers from Rwanda. It's shot in film and Polaroid. Really, really good photography, so I would suggest that. I have two books from a creative called Adam Yawe. He's more, I consider him more of a thinker. And the books are, like, the content of the books is unlike anything I've ever seen before. He has one book called Vitu vya Sanaa, which is about the methodology of making meaningful objects. There's Gida from Nigeria, which is also really nice. Basically, Gida features African creatives, young African creatives from the continent, basically give them a platform. And they just released their first issue last year. And it was super, super successful. It was one of our best-selling titles. So there's definitely demand for local titles. Yeah.
Well, and I think there's also an international demand for a title. I think people would be interested to see a Kenyan title here in London as well. I think that would be quite interesting. But tell me more still about Nairobi. What is the culture like when it comes to consuming press? I mean, do you have like a kiosk culture where people can buy, you know, a tabloid or a newspaper of the day? What is the type of relationship of Kenyans and that type of perhaps a little bit more commercial media I'm talking about?
When you walk through the CBD, you can definitely find newspaper vendors. Of course, with the advent of online, the newspaper vendors have reduced. We used to have magazine pop-ups in CBD, but nowadays you don't find them anymore. They used to sell, it's almost like, what's the name of that store in New York? The famous magazine store in New York.
Oh, Kaza Magazines.
Yeah. So you could find something similar back in the day, but nowadays it's difficult to find them because more people are consuming news and media online. But every now and again, you will find vendors, but they mainly sell newspapers. Maybe you'll find a magazine at the supermarket, but it's more like the mainstream publications, like 30 pages, etc. Yeah, I think that's the scene at the moment. Yeah.
Well, that's why we need more people like you, Michael. And finally, I mean, you have a great Instagram account. I think, is that the best place for people to find out more about Paper Cafe and the titles you sell?
Yes, at the moment it is. We also do 1 or 2 day event pop-ups around Nairobi. So at the pop-up, at least I can interact one-on-one with our clients. And if they need information about the titles, if they need recommendations, I can speak directly to them. And if any at one point, maybe during the weekend, I happen to be at the bakery, I can run people through the titles. So social media, and check our social media for when we do pop-ups.
Thank you, Michael. I hope to see you in Nairobi soon. For more information, go to their Instagram page, papercafe.nbo. Also this week, I've popped by a London's Japan House to visit their current exhibition, Japan Music Catalogue, a fascinating display of books looking at Japanese music through the ages, from city pop, video game music, to Japan's folk and classical music. While there, I spoke with Simon Wright, Director of Programming at Japan House London.
We have a small reference library in Japan House London. On one side, we have an ever-changing selection of books from our permanent collection, but we also have the ability to be able to show temporary displays themed around certain aspects of Japanese cultures. And this time, we've chosen music. And we work with a book curator in Japan, Haba-san from Bach, and he has an interesting approach to cataloguing, presenting, displaying books as if they are a kind of stream of consciousness. You don't put A next to B next to C or 1, 2, 3. It's what book influences the next book on the shelf and working around that. And we always work with him and his colleagues on various themes. And the music theme came up. It was quite a difficult one. We needed to be able to present something about music, we thought, in this display. We've done several other themes since we opened at Japan House, but music was important. But it became quite a difficult, lengthy conversation because it's so complicated. Mm-hmm. What do you actually focus on? Should we look at the traditions of Japanese music? Should we look at one area? Should we look at Japanese classical music? Should we look at one particular genre, like city pop, mm-hmm. for example? And Haba-san came up with the idea of this Japan Music Catalogue. And we picked up certain themes under the direction of Haba-san, what we thought would be an interesting, maybe a surprising presentation for people in Japan House.
I'm glad you did this overview instead of just focusing on a part. You mentioned city pop, which I love, but interesting, just looking from here, there's a book about video game music. And that's fascinating because maybe people don't know exactly the name of who is the composer, but so many people played video games and Mario. I mean, the music is great. And that's Japanese music too, right?
Absolutely. Pop culture is extremely important for music in Japan. The fact that we've got game music, the point there was to try and highlight the fact that technology has moved along and the capability of game music has developed, but there are still these very strong traces of what it was like for the Mario Brothers in the 1980s, for example, in contemporary game music, and how that has become in its own right a genre of music developed in Japan and relatively recently compared with something else, for example, like Hōgaku, which is the music traditions of Japan, things that you might associate when you think of Japanese music. They might immediately come to mind, the shamisen, for example, the shakuhachi, the music of kabuki, the music of no, that sort of thing.
Tell us more about the library in general. Is here a space where people can browse and perhaps study? You know, for example, if someone is a Japanese music obsessive, I am a little bit. Can they just come here and have a look? There is an amazing selection of books, and probably most of them you can't really find here in London, I would say.
Yes, absolutely. People can come and visit the library. It's free to enter. It's a reference library, which means if you want to have a look at the books, you've got to look at them in here. But people can come and do whatever they like, really. We have a lot of people who come maybe just for the space, this idea to study. I've seen a lot of people look at the books that we have, especially the large illustrated books. As you so rightly mentioned, these books have been sourced directly from Japan and not necessarily available in this country. Haba-san is also a big fan of secondhand books. I don't know if you know, there's an area of Tokyo called Jimbocho, which is full of secondhand bookshops. And it's a rich treasure trove of beautiful books. And within our library, we don't just necessarily have brand new books. We also have secondhand books that have been sourced in specialized secondhand bookshops in places like Jimbojo.
I wonder if you can mention perhaps, you know, not all of them, because some of them should be kept as a surprise, perhaps a book that you find it interesting. I love anything related to City Pop. As I told you, I'm a big fan. But I don't know, is there any other book that perhaps caught your eye?
I suppose the one that I'm most involved with at the moment is the manga series Golden Kamuy. And the reason we have Golden Kamuy in here is that we wanted to look at aspects of Japanese music which were not very familiar, such as the music of the Ainu communities of northern Japan, or of Hokkaido especially. And we have within our acquisition objects from that we are able to keep in Japan House for display later on, we have a tonkori, which is an Ainu stringed instrument made by Oki, the contemporary Ainu musician. And to put that together, we wanted to be able to show something which was a little different, maybe, from what you would normally see. I'm not sure I've ever seen a tonkori displayed in this country, in the UK, ever. And I am, well, we're a little bit absorbed by all things Ainu at the moment as well. So the whole Golden Kamuy series and some of the selection of books are there on display are quite fascinating. Noda Satoru, the manga artist who created the series of Golden Kamuy, did an immense amount of research with the Ainu communities in Hokkaido, and especially the Ainu community in Niputani. And so all the representations that you'll find in those manga are pretty beautiful and very, very well researched and accurate and admired and accepted by people of the Ainu community as well.
Simon, besides this lovely Japan Music Catalogue exhibition, what else can you talk to us about Japan House London at the moment, the current exhibitions, or perhaps anything in the future that you can mention already, something to give people a taster to come here and visit?
Our current exhibition is about contemporary Ainu culture in Hokkaido. It finishes at the end of this month, but if people have an opportunity to visit, then yes, I think it would be well worth having a look at something that has never really been shown in this country before, contemporary Ainu culture. Our next exhibition is about how we find design everywhere around us, and leading Japanese creators, be they architects, product designers, fashion designers, filmmakers. A series of these creators have been selected to tell us what they find inspirational in design in Japan. And they invite us also to think about what we find inspirational in design, whether it be in our own country or from somewhere else around the world. It's looking at your feet to see what is right in front of you and finding the beauty of that.
Thank you very much, Simon. And Japan Music Catalogue is at Japan House till the 31st of May. And that's all for this week's show. My thanks as ever to our editor, Jack Jewers. Any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fpandmonaco.com. And we're back next Saturday at 10 a.m. London time. Meanwhile, you can listen to the show again on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. It's goodbye from me.